Okay, so we usually begin with some chanting for good luck. So the good luck is so you don't catch a cold in the echo.
Oh, the echo's on, yeah.
Yeah, but never mind, because we do have something called environmentally friendly climate control, which is if it's hot, you keep a cool head. If it's cold, you keep a warm heart. It doesn't work. It's a nice idea. Anyway, so here we go. We're going to do some chanting now. So, are you ready? Okay, here we go. Okay, a one, a two. One, two, three, four.
This is what should be done. Taiwan, who is skilled in goodness, and who knows the path of peace, let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies, and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Very good. Always put lots of effort in whatever you do, otherwise it gets boring after 43 years of starting that. Excellent. So if the class monitors will collect today's assignment. This is NAPLAN. So we're going to test you out today. Now, meditation is all about relaxing and learning how to let go
of all the stuff which we carry around, which is so burdensome. We find out we don't need to carry it around. We'd be free. So, for those of you who are here for the first time, and those of you who keep forgetting my unforgettable examples, this is how we meditate. Here we go. How heavy is the glass of water? The longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. And if after 1 minute I keep holding it like this, my arm aches. After 2 minutes, I am in pain. After 3 minutes, I'm in agony and a very stupid monk. What should I do when this gets too heavy to hold comfortably?
Put it down.
Let it go. Relax. And if you can put it down and relax, even just for 30 seconds, or even more, 1 minute, when you pick it up again afterwards, it actually feels lighter. You can carry it without so much stress. And that is the answer. Stress in our modern world. We keep holding things way too long and we don't learn how to put it down, to let go and relax to the max. So these days people just don't know how to just be quiet and enjoy themselves. So first of all, we call this the Armadale Meditation Group. Well, what is its nickname? Club Med Armadale. Calling it Club Med means that, you know, it gives the idea that this is something about relaxing, putting down, enjoying the moment. And if we can learn how to put that little bit of fun into our meditation, into our letting go, it's pretty easy to do. So all we really need to do is just to have a little bit, it's almost like slowly guiding you into learning how just to let go of stuff. First of all, it's amazing just how people just do not know how to physically relax. In olden days, people used to, I was recently in Indonesia, Singapore, Hong Kong, and in those countries, some of those countries, like Singapore and Hong Kong, they used to be part of the British Empire. And you know why the British lost that empire? Because they knew just in the morning, they'd always have tea break. And they'd have a lunch hour, and in the afternoon, they'd have another tea break. Those tea breaks, when they were given away, and they stopped having tea breaks in the morning and afternoon, that is the cause of them losing their empire. The ability to relax and just let go and just be able to have some peace so you don't get stressed out and make wrong decisions. How many people in work these days have morning tea and afternoon tea? It's all gone, isn't it? People get stressed out. And it is well known that if you work too hard too long, you do end up just screwing up your brain. You get so tired and negative, just struggling to survive. And that's where a lot of sickness comes from, and a lot of like anger at home, a lot of fact that we don't feel good because we don't know how to relax. So in order to teach people how to let go and to relax, the first part of meditation, we use a little mindfulness, being aware, focused awareness on something, and learning how to relax things. And I would actually be teaching this, and an example of this, one of the examples which I love giving for people who haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. There was a monk years ago who was every time he tried to meditate, his back would always be painful. And so eventually he, you know, got a referral and had a CT scan because they didn't know what was wrong with him, and discovered he had a congenital defect in his spine. And they said, well, the best thing to do is just, you know, don't sit for too long. Keep moving around. He said, well, I'm a monk. It's like telling a chef not to eat. So anyway, he said, that's not good enough. So he found this little method in a book where, first of all, that the book was explaining on either side of the spine, because many people have back problems, either side of the spine there are muscles which we just do not use. We don't know they even exist. So he had to, first of all, take his hand and he would stroke those muscles every day for about 15 minutes or twice a day, and until he could actually feel those muscles without needing to touch them. It's a simple little training in just basically connecting your brain to that part of your body. Now, once he could experience those muscles on either side of the brain, which, no, I can't do, I don't have to, but he could actually feel those muscles, and then by a little bit of trial and error, try this, try that, he could learn how to move them, how to stretch them, relax them, just at will. Just the same way you can lift your hand up, you actually had to learn that when you were a kid, bit of trial and error, how you walk. You know, you fall over many times, but then you know how to balance. He learned the same way as we learn as children, how to move those muscles up and down, up and down. And so once he had some control over those muscles, next thing he did was to exercise them every day, until those muscles are so strong, they compensate for the weakness in his spine, and the problem was solved. What he was doing is learning about some of the muscles. I remember seeing as a kid, watching the TV, this is guy on TV, it was a bit gross, but he had his tummy and he could move it this way and that way, and all his muscles he was moving. And of course, as a kid, I tried that, but not for very long. I just got bored. But if you really have to, it's amazing, you can get some control over some muscles, which, you know, we don't really have to, so we don't. But this is what he did, and it was just the same method of having some awareness, a bit of trial and error, because the awareness gives you what we call feedback. Now, you're aware of that area, and then move it this way, move it that way, and you see what happens afterwards. And soon as you learn just how to move things. Like any other training, this has to be done quite regularly, but soon it's not that hard that you can just learn how to understand your body and also how to relax it, which is the interesting part of this little mindfulness and getting feedback of how your own body works. And as a monk, you have to do this really often, because sometimes you're off in the forest, off in your monastery, a long way from anywhere. And this is where I now begin the story of when I had food poisoning up in Serpentine. Now, people say that, oh, food poisoning, you should be a bit more careful what you eat. But you know, sometimes we have to eat what you give us. I don't cook it. I don't know what you put into those curries. I don't know, you know, how long you've had them for before you offer them to us. I should get a food taster just like they had in the old days. But no, even then I don't want to work, because it's, you know, sometimes you get tummy aches and stuff, but we call that occupational hazard for a monk. So anyway, but this was not just an ordinary tummy ache. This was full on food poisoning. If you ever had food poisoning, I was in my cave where I live in that monastery. And, you know, you couldn't help it. You realised your tummy was very sore. And there was a, ah! There was a, oh! Ah! No. I often tell my younger monks, if ever you're giving a talk, you know, we don't have much of visual aids or PowerPoints, but now, ah! Or, oh! It does keep people awake during a talk. So it's a really nice thing to do. So anyway, I was going, ah, and ooh, and all over the place, and it's a waste of time. If you went crawling, you know, to where the phone is, you know, it'd probably be locked or somebody on the phone, or you couldn't get the number, and by the time you got the number to call the ambulance, you know, by the time you'd probably be dead by then, or maybe not dead, but there's other ways. So what? I did as an example of just how to sort of look after your own body. So instead of just fighting, you become aware of the feeling, mindfulness. Really zoom into it. Get to know, you know, the feeling of just the contractions. You know, when you sort of, you get sort of a spasm in your, must be my intestines. And then you just learn what you need to do just to relax it, to ease it off. It was like the trial and error thing again. And because I was aware of it, I was watching it, soon you learn how just to let go a little bit. So the contraction just hurt a little bit less. The pain started to subside. It took me 20 minutes. That much quicker than asking for an ambulance. And honestly, 20 minutes, no pain at all. Everything had just relaxed. No food poisoning. Nothing, just a very healthy digestive tract. How that works, I just don't know. Because apparently the food poisoning is some bacteria which is creating havoc in there. But you know, over those years, that's about 4 or 5 years ago, over the years since, I've obviously tried to investigate what happened. And I think what happened there is, you know, bacteria, if you've seen them in sort of photos or something, like little blobs with tentacles all over the place. That's how I remember bacteria. Blobby things with tentacles, and I imagined all these little blobby things with tentacles causing havoc in my digestive tract. They all had their tentacles crossed in meditation, nice and quiet and comfortable. I'd count all little bacteria down so they were behaving instead of running riot like a party. So that's how I, probably not true, but anyway, that is actually how I imagined these things, which meant that, you know, that I was relaxed and everything just healed up. Now, of course, I've been doing this a long time, but I teach it to other people, and it does work. Because when you have your body, you can actually feel it's tight, it's tense, it's painful, and you learn just to be aware of that physical part of your body, really zoom in on it, and just try this and try that. You get feedback. In other words, you know if it's getting better or it's getting worse. And so as it gets better, as it relaxes, what you are doing is called letting go. You're being kind to it. You're opening the door of your heart to it because it feels much better. Well, a lot of the problem is because we're so tight. Fear, tensions. That really makes our body very, very tight. Relax, 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 relax. It's amazing what you can do. Just how many people have just amazing stuff which has happened. Okay. I'm going a bit. But anyway, here we go. This guy over in Sydney years ago on a retreat, and I was teaching. It's one of the wonderful, lovely stories. He, during the meditation, everyone was complaining. He was making too much noise, breathing. Can you please breathe quietly? They asked him. Which point I said, that gentleman, he told me before he came in, he's got this huge tumour in his top of his nose, sinus cancer. It's the best he can do. He can't breathe through his nose. He's got a block with this huge... And apparently, he checked in with me before the retreat started and said that his doctors have given up on him. There's nothing more we can do. So he tried meditation just as a last chance. Nothing to lose. But of course... Now this is an important part. I usually tell this on your retreats, that for 9 days he got nowhere. The very last retreat, last meditation, when he just gave up trying, he really learned how to let go, relax, not try so hard. That the very last one, I'd already got in the car, was about to go, and he came running after me. I jumped by, please, it only take 5 minutes, because I was going to the airport, catch a plane back to Perth. He said, during that meditation I heard a popping sound and I could breathe. First time in don't know how many months I could breathe for about 1 minute, and then it closed up again. And when he told me that, I didn't have time to to do very much, but I said, well, carry on, something's happening, well done. And I thought I'd never see him again. I thought he would die because it's too late. But you know, these stories always have happy endings. At least the ones I tell you, the ones that don't have happy endings, I never tell anybody. <'cause they're laughs> <down. laughs> So if it's a story, that's going to have a happy ending. For me, anyway. So anyway, so he, about a year later, 6 months, 9 months, something like that, I was in Sydney again, and this guy came up to me, and I said, do you remember me? And look, now somebody's really, you know, in the last stages of cancer, they look just so thin and all skin and bones and pallor. And this guy looked really healthy. And he said, I was that guy. And he said he carried on meditating and his tumour disappeared. And he said, I'm spending the rest of my life, just however many years I got, just teaching this to others. It's wonderful when that happens. You hear these lovely little stories. So, but you can understand how this works. Not always, but you learn how to interact with your body and how to relax things and let healing happen. And you know it's because you feel very peaceful, very open. And just the body just is incredible, just how it can heal if you give it half a chance. And then you go on to your emotional world and how you can relax that. So all the fears which we have about past and future, it doesn't help at all by worrying about them. So, you know, worrying about the future doesn't stop bad things happening, it just makes them more likely to happen when you worry about them. But we've got so much into worrying, we don't know how to even relax our own brain and allow it to have a bit of peace and quiet. Holidays, we tend to make ourselves more busy. Weekends, got so much stuff to do. But be able to put down the glass and relax a bit. That's what we're going to teach here. To learn how to have the ability and the courage and the means, the skill to be able to take a break with your poor brain and give it a few minutes of rest. So you don't have to worry about the past. And of course, over the future, the past as well. It's all done and dusted. Worrying about the past, you don't learn from the past, you learn from the present. The past is what puts you in a prison. In the present moment you have a bit of freedom. So learn from the present, this is where life is, where the only time you can do anything is now. So see if you can learn much more from what's happening right in this moment. And you'll find this happening with this little technique, relaxing your body first of all, being aware of it, then afterwards you do the same thing with your mind, your brain. And I'll teach you how to do that, just how to notice how peaceful you are and how to increase your peace. So if you feel that, you know how to relax. Not that hard to do. You don't need to focus on things with force. You learn how to relax things with mindfulness and kindness. And that means you become really, really peaceful. Get good results. And if you don't like it, you have money back guarantee in Armadale Meditation Group, Club Med. And even those books in the back, some of them are for sale, they also have a money back guarantee as well. Mm-hmm. It's true, you can always ask for your money back. You won't get it back, but you can ask. Yeah, that's a guarantee. Okay, so I will lead you through this meditation. I prefer sitting on the ground, the floor, which is my place. So, if you first of all, if you want just to stretch, come on, stand up, stretch. Oh, you're older than me. Oh. Yeah, a few creaks here and there. That's what I say, or to hide all the others. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Very good. Right, just about to see the clock. Very good. So, sitting down and closing your eyes. Because with your eyes closed, and please everybody close your eyes, it means if you really do need to put your little finger in your ear to give it a scratch, no one's watching. if you want to pick your nose, scratch this, whatever. So you don't feel people are looking at you. You can relax. So, sitting on a chair, or I prefer on the ground, how have you got your body? Is it comfortable? Now we're going to go much deeper into awareness of our body and just learning how to relax it. So first of all, how are your legs now? Do your legs need to be adjusted? Sometimes we think, no, this is good enough, but experiment. Put your, maybe your feet further away from the chair, maybe tuck them in a bit more, move them apart, to find out what's the best position for your legs. Because sometimes we're just not careful enough, which is why we get tightness and tension as we're even sitting. Your knees, people have a lot of problems with their knees later on, mostly sports injuries, but even now you can maybe feel those knees. Do the knees need to be pushed apart or stretched forward so there's not so much tightness on those knees? Because every time you're aware of your legs and you move it, you find that you get feedback. The sensations, the physical feelings in your legs tell you, yeah, this is good, or no, that was a mistake, put it back again. You're adjusting to find the best position for your legs. Sometimes in life you don't have time to do this, but here we're being taking the time to really get to know our legs and know what's the best position for them. Not only does this make the meditation more comfortable, but it's also an exercise in awareness and kindness. And you get the feedback, your leg is relaxing. Feels good. Then, once you are reasonably satisfied that your legs are comfortable enough, then move up to your buttocks. Your attention, how's your bottom now sitting on the chair, or in my case the cushion? Is it comfortable? Sometimes people meditating, especially on the floor, they say, oh, my leg goes to sleep, or I have to fidget, because you never put your part, that part of your body in a good position to begin with. So do the fidgeting now. Until you get your butt in the best possible position. And I like to start at the bottom of my body, the legs and then the butt, because all the time I'm just focusing this thing which I call mindfulness, becoming aware of my own physical posture. Then I feel my back. Many people have terrible problems with their back, again because they're not really aware of how they are holding their back. So one little trick which I often do is I give the back a big stretch, just like you see dogs go, nice big stretch before they lay down. Or sometimes you see them going around in a circle on a cushion or on their basket until they find the optimum position. Instead I ask me to sit down and just hope for the best. So just stretch the back and then let it go. You can move the body backwards and forwards. Find out what's best for you. Some people like to lean back against the chair. Some people like to lean forward. There's no rule here except just to get to know the feelings in your back and be kind. Be sensible. This is the best position for your back. If you're ever at work, on a chair or whatever, please be aware of how, if you hold your back one way, it can cause you a lot of pain another way, and you're comfortable being aware. And then your hands. So I usually put my hands in my lap, but because I'm holding a microphone, I'm used to this now, so it's quite comfortable holding the microphone like this. But how are your hands? Do you want to adjust them to make sure they're more comfortable? Then if you move up your arms, you've got your shoulders. And they too usually are a place where there's much tightness. So imagine your shoulders, the muscles on either side, just like a bundle of strings which are being stretched by both ends. Imagine that you let them go at both ends. You stop pulling at them. And if you're aware, you feedback that those muscles actually relax. You can feel them change, the tightness disappears. This is where you get to know your body and how to relax it. Just by mindfulness and kindness, you learn these things. How to relax your own body. And then, how you go up to my neck. People have pains in their neck, if not because they've got a bad boss, but because they've got their head this way or that way. So balance the head on top of the neck. And if you have an irritation in your throat because of a cold or allergies, you can be aware of that itch in your throat, which usually causes people to cough. Be aware of it and see what is necessary to relax it, to soothe it. It's amazing what you can do with a bit of awareness, which allows you to see if things are getting better or worse. That's what I call feedback. And just how to opening the door of your heart to that feeling, letting it be, relaxes things. Last of all, move to your face. Because on the face is written the expressions which reflect the emotions you're feeling. Fear, anger, depression, being fed up, being happy. All written on the muscles of your face. So be aware of those muscles. Find the eyes especially, the forehead, the mouth. And see what's necessary just to relax. Try and error, and you soon find out what works, what makes these muscles so relaxed. Once you've relaxed your face, then if you can, be aware of your whole body sitting here. That's a very pleasant feeling. It's one of the reasons why people do go to spas if they can afford them, or soak in a hot bath, or at the very least be able to lay in bed when you don't have to go to work, cozy, warm, snuggling into your pillow with the body reasonably very relaxed. But before we move away from our body, there's always one part in your body which is the most irritating. It could be like a tumor, it could be a wound from an injury, it could be some other disease or something which is going to cause you problems in the future. See if you can find out which is the most uncomfortable feeling in your body right now. And don't run away from it, but go as close as you can to it. Zooming in on it, being with it. Once you're aware of the most uncomfortable, disturbing part of your body, just a small part of your body, just focus on that one part. What makes it relax? What makes it more tight and tense and more painful? See if you can look upon it without fear, but with kindness. Letting it be. Expanding it, rather than trying to get rid of it. All these little words, they do have an effect. Just calming that feeling down. Soothing it. Making peace with it. Relaxing it. Soon you find you can have an effect on an irritation or pain without any drugs, medication or whatever. You can just look at it with your mind and have some control over it, to ease it, to soothe it. So the most irritating, disturbing part of your body, you can relax. And you find it does have an effect. You tend to have an opportunity of healing. All by yourself. Anywhere. Anytime. And I usually, at the very end, before I move away from my body, if you want to stay with your body longer, please do so if it's working. I just look at my whole body, again as a unit. You know, when you relax, it's a delightful feeling. And I just stay with that delightful feeling of relaxation. And when you notice and even indulge in the delight of a relaxed body, if you've got a relaxed body, you find your relaxation goes even deeper. You feel the body at peace with itself. Then I move on to my mind, my emotional world. And I introduce what I call the peace-o-meter. Just like you have a thermometer tells you how hot or cold it is. Like you have a speedometer if you have a car, how fast, how slow you're going. This is called the peace-o-meter. How peaceful are you right now? Or how agitated, restless are you? So, how restless or how peaceful? And give it a number from 1 to 10, because people love numbers. 1 means really peaceful, 10 means quite restless. What number would you give it? All this means is you become aware, mindful, just like you're mindful of your legs or your throat. Now you're mindful of your brain, how peaceful it is. Trial and error, what makes your mind more peaceful? What makes it more agitated? More disturbed, more restless? Just get to know your peaceometer, how it works. How to relax. Not reacting to anything, just making peace, being kind, being gentle. You'll probably find that you're in this thing we call the present moment now. It almost tricked you into letting go of your past, not worrying about your future. This is present moment, it's really important. It's where you find health, freedom from aches and pains, and how you can relax your own mind. Right now, how peaceful are you? may also find that your inner coventry, your thought, is much, much less. The more relaxed you are, the less thinking you have, simply because you haven't got so much business, so much problems to solve in this present moment. You haven't got as much to do. Right now, how peaceful are you? How to deepen that peace. Maybe you can notice how delightful it is to be peaceful. Just being here. Maybe sounds outside, but you made this wonderful little bubble. You're inside of it, safe. Any sounds are a long way away. Go inside. Safe, warm, peaceful. Nothing to do. Just to be. Now, what number would you give your peaceometer now? Has it gone down? If so, carry on. You're learning the way of peace. As you become more and more peaceful, you may begin to notice that quite naturally you become aware of your breathing. Simple act which goes on all the time, which we're so busy we don't even notice. Just breathe in naturally. And as you breathe in, imagine this peace, health, energy coming into your body with every in-breath. We're all tired, get old, have sicknesses. Many things we have to do, but imagine peace. Wherever you feel it, wherever you imagine it, energy, good health, imagine it coming into your body with every in-breath. And as you breathe out, let go of any tightness, tension, worries, sicknesses. Everything negative, breathe out with every out. Breathe in peace. Breathing in peace. Breathing out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Sometimes it helps to just imagine you're looking at all of this from a distance. You're not entangled in it, just looking from a distance. Almost like it's not your breath, it's not your body, not your mind. Just watching it from a distance. A supervisor, not an owner. So you can relax. Relax. Just at peace, watching over your own body and mind, but not entangled into it. Just breathing in. Peace. Breathing out, let go. Knowing that you are safe. And that you deserve peace. You've earned it. Since the peace is just resting on you, just gently, breathing in peace. You're without echo. All troubles, all stress, all pain, they all go out with every out-breath. So little by little, you breathe in only positive things. Little by little, the mind loses all its negativity, body loses all its illness, the tension, the stress. Breathing in peace. Inhale, echo. Just notice how you feel. If this feels pleasant, then carry on. You get into it, but try not to control things. Your body knows how to breathe. And the body relaxes when you don't control. You are like putting down the cup of water, relaxing as much as possible. You do need to adjust the body, it's fine. Just move the body this way, that way to get into an even more comfortable position. But do it as quietly as you can. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. I'm going to be quiet for 5 minutes. See what happens when I'm not talking. After 5 minutes, I'll say a few more words before ringing the gong. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you all feel? By which I mean, how relaxed is your body? Is it more relaxed than when you began? Can you feel it just opening out? Feeling, being comfortable? And how is your mind? How peaceful are you? What's it like when you let things go, you put things down, and just be at peace? Some of you, this is your first time. Can you imagine, with practice, how peaceful you can become? When you finish, you feel like you're recharged. Whatever you need to face in this world, now you have energy. So I'm now going to ring the gong. It's the gong gong. I'll just imagine a gong. Three times. Gong. 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 Okay. Where did that gong go? Over there, okay, too far away from you. Okay, very good. Is that good sound effects or do I need to improve it a bit?
Yeah.
We have a question.
One question in the box
over there. Very good. But how about questions outside the box? Thinking outside the box. I'll do the box question first of all. And then we'll see afterwards. Here we go. Is it very important? No? What's the rest of the story? To start a day meditate, or does it matter what time of the day we meditate? Yes, the best time to meditate and the worst time to meditate. The best time to meditate is now. The worst time to meditate is later. That's important. Look, what's the best time to eat? When you're hungry, when you need some food. So it's the same when the best time to meditate, when you need some peace, when you need some relaxation, when you need just to recharge your body and your mind. And just with that simile of putting down the cup, it is any time that you meditate, you take time out, you actually make time. You have more time afterwards. Now this little simile of the cup, I invented that years and years and years ago. And now you see every now and again somebody sees some psychologist somewhere and just, you know, using this. Even there was this, I was at some function somewhere in Perth, and the local MP for Perth, Eleni Evangelina or somebody, she, you know, went on the stage and said, no, in her presentation, it was one of the Buddhist New Year ceremonies or something. She said, I heard from a wise man that the problem of stress is you hold a cup for too long. I went after, I was laughing my head off. I said, that's my simile. You plagiarist. But anyway, it got into even Harvard, where they teach it as an investment of time. Investment of time, because Harvard Business School, okay, business, you've got to know the jargon in order for people to understand it. An investment of time, what that really means is that if you take a quarter of an hour, half an hour, relaxing, resting, it's not a waste of time. In fact, afterwards, you find yourself energized, clear, and you find that whatever problems you have to solve in life, you can do it. You've got much more energy and clarity and much better health. You've recharged, which is one of the reasons why you go to all these places in the world. They've all got these meditation rooms. In Google headquarters, that's over in Mountain View in California, and Facebook headquarters, that's also just around the corner. And where else is there? In LinkedIn. I went there the other day. That was at Singapore. No, Hong Kong office over there. All these places, and not just corporations, but also schools now are introducing meditation. This little bit of relaxing. Oh, I don't know, I haven't seen her for a while. But remember Kelly? She was... Oh, what's her name? Surname. Always remember Kelly. She... Oh, let's see. Very good. Thank you, back. Okay. Now, normal service is now resumed. She was a primary school teacher, year six, over in Rolderstone School. And she would come over here and learn meditation. And she taught it in her class, year sixes, grade sixes, at Rolderstone Primary School. And she would call it quiet time. And instead of calling it meditation, because, you know, people would think, oh, we're indoctrinating people in some form of religion. So I called it quiet time. And she told me, she'd start with, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, the start of the school year, and build it up over the year. And so by the end of the year, every morning, it would do about 10 or 15 minutes of quiet time. And she also said that whenever, it was wonderful, that whenever there was any sort of trouble in the class, you know, boys and girls, and then someone put their hand up, "Miss, can we have quiet time now?" And that would just, you know, diffuse any of this social tension which, you know, 30 kids have in a class. And it was so good that, of course, eventually the principal, I forget what his name was, he's a guy, he said, "Oh, look, I am a very devout Christian, and I get all these complaints," because Rolderstone is, you know, a high economic area, "I have all these complaints that, you know, that we're teaching sort of a foreign religion in a Christian area, but I'm a, you know, devout Christian myself, and I've seen the results. It's not religious, this is actually gets people's academic achievement up, and also their social cohesion, and getting everyone to become more sensitive to one another." He said it's just win-win-win all the way, and that was about 30 years ago, 25 years ago. So, you know, it's taken a while. You know, Rolderstone was, you know, way ahead of the game, but then she retired. I don't know what happened next. But all these things, you can see just how in a community, in a school, in even corporations, just having a little bit of time out increases people's productivity, social cohesion, relaxation, and health. Because it's quite obvious to myself just where, you know, ill health comes from. People are so stressed out in today's world. Because, you know, sometimes you have to meet the demands of all these bosses who have their demands put on them. And I'm a boss. They call me the boss monk over at certain times. But, you know, you just relax, people. Spend time by yourself. So you can get much more work done without getting upset or angry or getting sick. So all these little things, but learning how to be aware and learning how to be relaxed, it is great for productivity, great for health. One of the reasons why I think we're allowed to use this place, because we... Now, this group here, going for I don't know how many years, has saved the Armadale Health budget huge amounts of money. 31 years, is it? Yeah, they should be sponsoring us and just paying us for being here, because we're actually doing their job for them, making a much more peaceful, happier community, you know, for free. But I like that, because, you know, when it's actually sometimes that, you know, for free. This lady years ago, she called me up and said, I hear you teach meditation. I said, yeah, I teach meditation, quite a well-known meditation teacher. She said, how much do you charge? I said, nothing. And she said, well, you can't be any good then. And that's, you know, what people think. So these days, we don't say it's for free anymore. We say it's priceless. You know, it makes a lot of difference, but the idea of, you know, actually, you know, just doing this for money never makes any sense to me. So instead, you know, this is a gift for people. It saves a lot of pressure and problems for people. And it also has great unexpected benefits. Last week, I was in Indonesia giving talks all over the place. And just on the flight, you know, I was on Singapore Airlines flight from here to Singapore, which I gave some talks in there to Medan in Sumatra. There, I'm just sitting minding my own business on the aircraft, and then who comes out? The captain comes out and comes up to me and said, hey, you're Ajahn Brahm. And I did give away, you know, just no one else. And he said to me, he said, my wife, you know, he was English. My wife, who was Singaporean, ordered me to come and make sure that you get well looked after. And I said, why? And he told me, he said, because my wife has been spending so many nights in bed with you. And what he meant was, it's lovely they say these little ways of saying things. Because, you know, she had going some very bad cancer and chemotherapy and so sick that many evenings she couldn't sort of sleep properly. So, you know, read some of the books and the audio tapes, which, you know, you record in here, and just that's got her through her cancer. Thank you. So she ordered me to actually, if you're on my flight, which she found out I was, look after. So you wanted to upgrade me into the cockpit. So that's illegal. I'm happy where I am, but I certainly got well looked after. So I'm saying those things because it's amazing just how effective and how much these things can actually mean for people, and how they can get people through some very difficult times. Simply just learn how to relax. And even in offices, in business, is how it can take the stress away from life very easily. And just how, you know, what your boss wants is to make you more productive but also more sensitive to other people. And that's one of the most important things in life, to be have that sensitivity to the people you live with. So instead of a lot of times arguments mostly start off because people are just so tired and stressed out they can't think straight. Just to learn how to relax. So from this group years ago, I don't know how many times this happened. It may have happened to you tonight, but this woman said after the meditation, said, "I just need to tell you this, Ajahn Brahm. I never felt like coming to the meditation group this evening because I just come home from work and just you're really tired, exhausted. You just want to." No, stay at home, put your feet up, have a cup of tea, have something nice, watch some rubbish on the TV or whatever it is, but, you know, I just don't feel like going to a meditation group. And then my kid told me, said, Mummy, are you going to meditation tonight? I said, no, darling, I don't feel like it. Mummy, you must go to meditation. No, I'm tired. Mummy, go to meditation tonight. And then I asked my kid, why? Because you're a much nicer mummy when you come home from meditation. And that's from experts. Well, it's true. You know, you are just much more peaceful afterwards, let alone being healthier. So that's one of these great benefits of these things, have a more peaceful and happy world. And in fact, I don't watch the TV, but there's a program called Q&A.
Yep.
You know, Q&A, it's supposed to be Monday night or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, some years ago, only a year or two ago, they're having a debate, or questions about how to solve the terrorism problem, or the war in Syria. A serious business. And one of the people who is apparently on this debate, the reason why I heard about it, he was an editor of the very well known English newspaper, The Spectator. Quite right wing, but he was an editor there. He was in Australia for something or other. And so they said, well, what's your idea of solving the problem of terrorism and violence in the Middle East? And this guy said, well, he'd just seen a piece of research from Sussex University in England, where they found out when enough people are meditating, even those people outside, you know, even the people in the waiting room for the out-of-hours service and other people, they actually pick up on the energies. And they become more peaceful, even if you're not actually in the meditation group. He said, you know, this research was done, it was actually proved. It goes much further than just the people meditating. So he said, my solution, said the editor of the Spectator, is to find a few Buddhist monks and nuns and parachute them into Syria. And that will solve the problem. At which point I thought of a couple of monks I'd like to but I stopped myself because that was not being compassionate and kind. But I can't say things like that. But anyway, it was actually true, just the effect that you have on the people you live with and the people who have to put up with you. That's also the case. Yeah. Okay.
An unusual question, but I've only been doing it 4 or 5 months and finding a lot of major benefits from it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how to put this because it's like really unusual, but the robes you wear.
Yeah.
Do you have to wear them all the time?
No, not all the time. When I'm in the shower, I take them off. Okay. No, just, yeah. I haven't got, like, civvies or anything. You could just wear.
These look really uncomfortable.
Oh, no, these are great. Just, look. Okay, we know it's just, I say it as it is. You always just felt just like trousers. It was always just so close and just, I was always afraid to get the zip caught on you know what. And, you know, this stuff here is just so much easier. Just like robes. And this is my, it really is my bed sheet. When I go to bed at night, I'll put it out there. It's my bed sheet. It has so many other advantages. Because I do travel around a lot. And so I was actually traveling to UK to give some talks, teach a retreat. And that was a time when I think the Malaysian aircraft was shot down over Ukraine or somewhere. And people said, okay, Brahm, you know, you should be very careful because, you know, I was going the same route. And they said, oh, I don't have to worry because, number one, if I get shot down, this is my parachute. Just hold on to both sides and just you float down quite naturally. You could keep it levitated. But then what happens if, you know, you parachute down into Syria? You know, they spend to what, if you're in the middle of the IS, Islamic State, take one look at you. You know, you're an infidel, for a start, you're not one of us, and you're white. You know, you'll be the first one to have your throat cut. I said, I've got it all planned out. Because what I do, I just cut a little slit in the robe. This will be my burqa. No one will understand what was it.
Yeah. They wouldn't dare look.
But no, the robes is very, very simple. And of course, this is the only thing you have. So, you know, you have a spare one. So, when you get up in the morning, this is what you wear. Instantly recognisable.
I think that's what probably got me so much about getting into this philosophy and what I'm doing now. You guys are also cool. Like, it's like, you know.
Cool, yeah.
I'm not cool. It's not like everything else. Like, everyone else is trying to drum stuff in here, and you guys don't do that.
Look, yeah, just we've been through that. Just people trying to sort of brainwash you. But yeah, we're actually, you know, we do try and brainwash you, but we do it more subversive. In other words, but you know that other people know that you're becoming much better people, so we don't force things. Forcing things on, it just doesn't, never ever works. Look, you've maybe heard it before, the old curing and caring. This was one of these people I knew when he was a little kid, when his mum first brought him to the temple. He did really well at school, and then he became went to medical school, you know, really bright kid, and then eventually became a doctor. He's working in Royal Perth as like an intern or whatever it was, or not an intern, a registrar or whatever. Anyway, the first year as a doctor, when he starts to take responsibility, and he came to me one day, he said, "I can't do this anymore. I have to resign. Find something else to do in my life." I thought, just all that work, and you become a doctor, medical doctor, and you want to give it up now? What happened? And I think you can appreciate just his dilemma, because he was treating. He was actually responsible for this woman. She was only about 23, 24. And, you know, she wasn't supposed to die. But, you know, it wasn't his fault. No, even school doctors would have noticed it. But whatever it was, this girl died on his watch. And he felt so guilty about it. But then, and there's nothing wrong, no one could have spotted it. But he had to be the one who told the husband. No, this girl was only 23, she was only 24, 25, just young people, beginning of love, just, you know, really sort of so close to one another that the woman you've chosen to spend the rest of your life with has died. And it was a shock, you know, it was not anticipated. And what really, really hurt, he said, "And your two young children have got no mother." And I can imagine just what that would do to somebody. You know, the sort of pain and the shock in this father, and the two children didn't know what was going on. It was just devastating. He said, "I can never ever do that ever again. I feel so responsible, so guilty. It hurts, you know, unbearably." And that's, you know, when I sort of looked at him and said, "Look, you've misunderstood the purpose of being a doctor, or a nurse, or a psychologist, or any other carer. Your job is not to cure, but to care. Because you can't always cure people. We're all going to die somewhere, sometime." So I always say that life is a sexually transmitted terminal disease. So, you know, it's the old terminal. So, you can't always cure people. So, if you think curing is the purpose, you're a doctor. You're going to go through this time and time again. You're going to feel such a failure. You can't always cure people, but you can always care for them. That's your job. And if, you know, that somebody has been really cared for, and the family knows that, you've cared for them so much, and you cared for the relations, and of course, it changes the whole atmosphere, it changes the whole ball game, as they say. Caring becomes more important than curing. Then you never need to fail. You can always care for someone. And that's the same with husbands and wives. Look, many of you have been married a long time now. You should know you cannot cure your husband. No way, it just causes it worse. You can't cure your wife. You can care for them. And what happens if you make caring the most important part of any relationship, you find the cure happens almost like a side effect? That's what I told him. I said, you'll cure more people when you don't make curing your priority, when you make caring your priority. More people under you will be cared for. And of course, you know, he carried on. He's a top doctor. He's always had these nice little stories. One of my mics, a little moody, so he doesn't come here, but you know, one day he should. He's a nice teacher. He was passing blood, you know, in his stool. Mm. And so, you know, he thought, my goodness, that could be sort of bowel cancer. Mm. So, you know, told the doctor, and the doctor gave, right, you better go and get a colonoscopy. Yeah. Thank you again. Anyway, colonoscopy is the polite word for it, to get something done. So, you know what it's like in our system, that sometimes, even if it's an emergency, sometimes it takes a long time. So then we thought, maybe we can just do it private. So when we were investigating just how much it might cost, we found one of the top colonoscopists, I call them bum doctors, was actually this fellow. So as soon as, you know, top colonoscopist was the guy, you know, almost resigned and I kept him in his job, as soon as he heard it was one of my mucks, fast track, all for free, no charge. I kind of like that sort of stuff when, you know, things happen and it's all just you've been kind to someone else and it's karma, it comes back to you. And there was nothing wrong, it was just an inflammation of the colon, so it was fine, but, you know, it was a bit of a dodgy situation for a while, but it's great that these things happen, and you know, there's something much more important than money. This is kindness, instead of curing people, caring for them. And that's eventually what happens in the relationships. Oh, sometimes your husband drives you crazy, but then, you know, if he disappears, you miss him so much.
Then
the retreat. Then the retreat, we'll sort him out, give him the tune up.
Can you keep him some more?
It always comes back better. What you have with a car, and it's just, you know, making lots of noise, it's not performing well, you send them for a tune up.
Yeah.
To the garage. So our retreat centre is like a garage. It tunes up husbands, tunes up wives, tunes up your kids.
Good silence.
Yeah, and then they just. And in the meantime, you're having a nice time.
Yes.
Can I tell him that?
No, yes.
But that's sometimes curing, caring, not curing. It's important enough. Because sometimes, I don't know, I've seen some of the things which people do out of fear when somebody's about to die. Mm. It's cure at all costs, instead of caring.
What about that old man that went to Switzerland?
Oh, yeah, David Goodall. It's fair enough. The first person who legally had assisted suicide was a fellow called Mr. Dent.
Hmm.
Bob Dent, who was a Buddhist from Northern Territory. Hmm. I never met him, but one of the other monks, he died in Yanadabo, and he's in Royal Perth when he's down here for some treatment. Hmm. I got all the information about him. And this fellow was not depressed. He had this degenerative disease which had that zero quality of life, which could go on for years and years and years and years and years and years. He was okay with just being in that situation, but the thing which pushed him into asking for voluntary euthanasia once it was allowed in the Northern Territory was that his wife had no life for herself, that she was 24/7 caring for her husband, and yeah, she could get some respite, but still she felt it was her job to look after the man, you know, that she loved and cared for her, and as long as he was in that state, she had no freedom for herself. And the main thing which made this Bob Dent opt for voluntary euthanasia was just out of love for his wife, to give her some freedom. And now that's a pretty sort of convincing argument. He was not sort of depressed, he was not negative. And so I think people should have that choice.
They should?
Yeah. It's up to them. Hmm. Not up to me. Not up to the president of the AMA.
No.
And another thing which really tipped me over to was you all know that I came from London, even though I joke sometimes that, you know, when people say, where are you from? I said, I was born in the bush. I grew up in the bush. Shepherd's bush. But anyway, that my mum had dementia. She was in her 80s. And my mother was at peace and not disturbed so much, but I saw this other couple of people in this dementia ward who were terrified every moment, because I actually sat next to one of them and tried to do some comfort, but they got even more anxious because they could not every moment they could not remember where they were, who they were with, and so their idea of safety and security was totally taken away from them. And I don't know if any of you, because I travel a lot, sometimes you wake up in this bed somewhere in this hotel or this temple, and the first thing, where the heck am I this morning? It's, you know, it's very disconcerting when you don't know where you are, or people you know to give you some sense of belonging or some grounding. And it didn't take me long to realize that there's a couple of these elderly women with dementia. They were just terrified every second of every minute of every hour of every day. Physically, they could be well looked after, but the only way to get rid of that suffering, to give them so-called palliative care. The only thing which would stop that is to drug them to the eyeballs so they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And even here there was, do you remember Don Clark? Remember him in the early days?
Yeah,
he was this old British sailor who retired, you know, sailing around the world for the British Navy, decided Perth was the place he wanted to retire to, and he used to be one of the early members here. You know, he died up in the hospital up there. I remember going to see him, and he said, can't you take me round the back and shoot me?
No.
He was suffering that much. So, those sorts of things. It's not my right to put someone out of my misery, because I don't like to see him suffer like that.
Mm.
I think it should be a people's choice.
Mm.
Yeah.
Two words. Empathetic and apologetic.
Empathetic, apologetic.
Since I've been here, I've learnt the difference between the two.
Yeah.
Where I used to go around saying sorry all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And now I've sort of gone beyond that and sort of like understand the reasons for their misery or for their complaints. So the two words are quite different but very similar sounding. So
yeah,
I'm not sure, which one's the way to go.
Again, so see, you see that with that shooting in that school where, those kids in the United States kept on saying, look, my prayers and my feelings are with you. It's not enough. Just saying sorry is sometimes not enough. So it's, you're sorry, but let's do something about it, if it's possible. So usually what we have is, in Buddhism, we call it the AFL code. You acknowledge, you realize that something's happened. You do forgive, because just punishment just makes things worse. And then we learn, we try and do things better next time. So that's, part of the empathy, but an active empathy, not so I feel your pain. Yeah, what are you doing about it? So, sometimes we can't do very much, but at least we move forward in life. Always learning, growing, doing things better next time.
Don't feel sorry about being guilty.
Oh, no. Well, that sorrow about being guilty. Yeah, you do feel, I wish I hadn't have done that, but you don't wallow in it. Because sometimes people feel sorry. But let's do something about it. Let's learn from it.
You haven't told us a joke
yet. I told us a joke. Did I tell a joke? Sorry. What's the joke I was? No, I can't tell that one. I can tell this one. It was somebody sent me this morning. It was a little cartoon, and the cartoon was the aliens had landed in front of the White House. Okay, and the aliens said, take me to your leader. And the person who was walking his dog in the park next to the White House said, as long as you promise to take him back to wherever you came from with you. Okay, anyway. So, you want to stick around and say some more things afterwards, but I'm getting a message there that my time has run out. Time's up.
Doing credit.
Yeah, great. Oh, okay. Okay, so, are you going to make any announcements or
say yeah, just well?
Okay, here we go. The mic is yours, Mike. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Arjun, for your time tonight, on behalf of the group. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
If anybody wants to hear any more of Arjun's stories, we've got books for sale over there, three or four of Arjun's books. Please feel free to have a look at them and see David if you're interested.
A money back guarantee. You can ask for money back. I don't think David will give it to you.